Welcome to episode 322 of the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I'm Ashley Scott Myers, screenwriter and blogger over at sellingyourscreenplay.com. Today I'm interviewing Philip Harder, who just did a cool 1970s period piece called Tuscaloosa, starring Natalie Dreyer from Stranger Things. It's based on a book which he adapted. Philip goes into great detail about how he wrote the script and eventually got the film produced, so stay tuned for that interview. If you find this episode valuable, please help me out by giving me a review in iTunes or leaving a comment on YouTube or retweeting the podcast on Twitter or liking or sharing it on Facebook. These social media shares really do help spread word about the podcast, so they're very, very much appreciated. Any websites or links that I mention in the podcast can be found on my blog in the show notes. I also publish a transcript with every episode in case you'd rather read the show or look at something later on. You can find all the podcast show notes at www.sellingyourscreenplay.com/podcast. And then just look for episode number 322. If you want my free guide, How to Sell a Screenplay in 5 Weeks, you can pick that up by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. It's completely free. You just put in your email address and I'll send you a new lesson once per week for 5 weeks, along with a bunch of bonus lessons. I teach the whole process of how to sell your screenplay in that guide. I'll teach you how to write a professional logline and query letter and how to find agents, managers, and producers who are looking for material. Really is everything you need to know to sell your screenplay. Just go to sellingyourscreenplay.com/guide. A quick few words about what I'm working on. So the main thing I'm working on now, obviously, is The Rideshare Killer, my thriller mystery that we shot in December. We're still meeting with editors and trying to figure out the best fit for this project. Hopefully another week or so and we'll have all of that figured out. The other thing I've started to do is try and set up my next feature film. I've got a film noir thriller with some interest, so I have a little bit of funding in place. We're aiming at shooting this project for a little over $100,000. We'll get some name actors like we did with RSK. We'll get a guy like Eric Roberts, if not Eric Roberts, someone sort of comparable to that. So we'll get at least one name actor in this sort of budget range. As I said, I do have some interest in this. And right now we have about half of the money committed and ready to go. So we're just trying to raise the other half. So I've been sending out feelers trying to see if I can rustle up the rest of the money. I was thinking it might be helpful to talk about exactly what I'm doing, just to try and demystify the process a little bit. This is not, it's not rocket science. It really is just pretty straightforward. So I'll just kind of go through quickly what I'm doing to try and raise the money. This is sort of the first pass. And, you know, over the next couple of months, kind of what I'm aiming for is, you know, like the next 3 months, we got March, April, you know, maybe into May, I'll spend trying to raise the money. And then hopefully we'll go into pre-production towards the summer. So let me just, as I said, talk about kind of what I've been doing to try and raise the money. And again, maybe this can be valuable to you. You can kind of see my approach and just seeing someone else's approach. Maybe that will just demystify it a little bit and give you the confidence to go out there and maybe potentially raise some money. So I have some producer friends who work in the low budget space. I reached out to one of them specifically. We had a long phone conversation with him. He's actually shooting something now, or at least in the next week or so. He's doing some pickups for a film that he did. So he actually had some questions for me, some like logistical stuff on insurance, just stuff that I had gone through with The Rideshare Killer in December. So he actually had some questions for me. We talked briefly about this new noir thriller, mystery thriller that I'm working on. He's always cultivating actors who want to invest in films in order to get a lead role. We talked on the phone at great length about that. He was very polite. And as I said, I mean, I've helped him out. He's helped me out over the years, but I'm skeptical that that will actually pan out. Raising the money is so tough. Producers really covet their investors. So it's unlikely that a producer would give me one of his investor contacts. But we're pretty good friends, so you never know. And you're going to see a lot of what I'm doing at this sort of first pass at trying to raise this money. This is sort of the level that I'm at. When I send these emails out, when I make these phone calls, they're always, you know, I always go into it sort of with that mindset. I doubt it will work out, but you never know. And eventually, if you hit enough of those, doubt it will work out, but you never know. If you hit enough of those, hopefully eventually one of them actually does work out. So again, these are kind of just big blind swipes at getting this thing going. I reached out to several other producers as well. Again, typically people that are sort of working in the low budget space. Now, these folks are definitely people that I've met primarily through my own email and fax blast, sending them scripts. Most of these producers I've gotten to know by optioning them scripts, or at the very least, they've really liked something I wrote. I think I think everybody that I reached out to, in terms of these first level producers, I think they've all optioned or bought one of my scripts. I don't quote me on that, but I think so. That's just to give you some idea of the relationship. A lot of these people I've never met in person. Some of them I have met in person. And when I say, a lot of these people, it's not like I have this huge list. I would say I've probably gone out to about six people that are pretty close contacts. As I said, the producer I just mentioned, and then a number of other producers. One of the other producers is also an actor, so I'm offering him a good role in the film. He actually optioned this script several years ago, and he's a producer and an actor himself, so I know he knows how to raise money. Got on a phone call with him. Again, he doesn't really want to raise money for my project. He wants to raise money for his projects. Of course, he's happy to do the role. So again, this is another one I don't think it will work out, but we had a nice phone conversation and we're definitely still in touch. So that is progressing a little bit. Another producer, and this is a producer I have dealt with over the years. He bought a script of mine several years ago. It was actually a film noir thriller, somewhat similar to this project. And he's a producer, and his wife is an actress. So he produces films, gets involved with film projects, really to try and get his wife some good lead roles. So that's kind of where we're going with this as well. Just trying to see if they like the script and potentially want to invest. I reached out to a number of other producers. Again, these are producers who invest, executive producer type producers. And when I say exec producer, an executive producer type producer, typically on a feature film, especially like an indie feature like this, when you see an executive producer, more often than not, that typically means that they are one of the investors, or at the very least, they are one of the people that helped raise the money. So some of these other producers, I would say they're more executive producers. And when I sort of qualify that, this, for instance, this guy, this first producer that I mentioned, he's a real producer. Obviously, he does raise money. So he, potentially you could kind of, and he has executive producer credits actually on other films where he's just raised money for them. But he's a real producer where he's sort of a line producer as well, nuts and bolts logistics. He can, get the insurance and hire the camera guy and just all that sort of stuff. That's more of like a producer type of a job than, say, just like an executive producer who just brings in money. Anyways, again, just going out to some of these other people, probably five, six, I'd say a handful of these contacts, just trying to kind of see what they're up to, and if they have any interest. Basically, all I'm doing when I reach out to them is kind of what I'm describing here. Is I kind of tell them a little bit about the project. Typically, send them the script, give them a very basic budget. I haven't done like a super detailed budget. I made sort of a preliminary budget just to kind of see where I think where these things. This script is a little more complicated than The Rideshare Killer, just in terms of it has a lot more locations. It's not bigger really in terms of the scope with actors or story, but it has a lot more locations, so that's going to make it a little more of a challenge. And as I said, we're going to have to spend a little bit more money to get some of those locations. So that's kind of what I'm pitching to these people. Again, the idea is to raise money for about 3 months, pre-production for about 3 months, and then shoot in about 6 months. And that's really all I'm pitching to these people when I pitch them, whether it be phone call or text. Mostly what I do is I email them first, and then that will hopefully lead to a phone call or texting. Now, again, keep in mind who these folks are. These are not people that I don't have a fairly close relationship with. These are producers that I have dealt with before. As I said, I've either sold or optioned something to them. But even more importantly than that, obviously it's good that they've read something of mine that they like. They think I'm a quality writer or whatever. Obviously, that's very, very important. And that's really the cornerstone, I say, to the relationship. If they don't think you're a good writer, obviously they're not going to invest in your film. But the other thing is these are people that I know potentially could help invest in films. So when I was putting The Rideshare Killer together, for the most part, I reached out to all of these people with that as well, that project as well. For whatever reason, they didn't want to invest, but they knew I was working on it. So these are sort of regular people that I stay in contact with. So now when I get back to them with this project, again, I'm pitching them this new project, but I'm also telling, oh, by the way, we ended up doing The Rideshare Killer. And a lot of investors in films, because there's so many flaky people in this business, a lot of people, oh, yeah, can you invest in my movie? Blah, blah, blah. And then they just, no, I'm not going to invest in your movie. And the movie never gets done. So I wanted to show that sort of momentum and that consistency. And if they were on the fence with the rideshare killer, I'm hoping that if they see that, hey, I'm out there actually making movies, I'm making things happen, I'm getting these things done, hopefully that will be enough to kind of push them just over the edge and potentially invest in this film. But we'll see. What's funny too is as I was going through and just preparing, and when I do these podcasts, I just kind of cook up. I mean, you can tell it's not, I'm not writing a script for the podcast, but I do kind of come up with an outline, just sort of the basic points of what I'm going to say. And what's interesting today, as I was coming up with kind of just outlining what I was going to say for this section and talking about these producers, I reached out to that producer. I was trying to remember who I'd actually reach out to him. And as I said, it's probably like five or six pretty close producer contacts. But I started to think of other producers that I've dealt with over the years. I said, I should reach out to him. Oh, I should reach out to him. So probably by next week, I'll probably have another four or five, six producers that I've reached out to as well in a similar manner. Now, these are guys that, are less familiar with me. Let's put it to you like that. The relationships are probably a little bit less than this first pass. For the most part, this first pass are people I've dealt with quite a bit. I mean, they know who I am. It's not like I'm going to send them an email. This next pass, as I said, some of these other producers I'm thinking of executive producers and actors, some of these other people that I'm thinking of, even maybe a director. There's one director I know. There's some other people. But as I said, those relationships are a little bit more tenuous. So wanted to start obviously with the closest relationships and kind of branch out to that. Anyway, that's the main thing that I am working on this week. If anyone that's listening to this podcast has any interest in investing and potentially wants to learn how to produce a film, please email me. We're happy to take that sort of an investment. And as I said, we're producing films. I'm producing these films at a pretty low budget. And if someone has any interest in really learning how to do this and potentially putting in some investment money, I'd be more than happy to bring someone on as a producer. And as I said, really show them exactly what they do. And, hopefully they can help out and they'll be doing some of the actual producing as well. If they wanted, anyways, that's the main thing I'm working on, for this week and probably the foreseeable future. So now let's get into the main segment. Today, I am interviewing writer, director, Philip Harder. Here is the interview. Welcome, Philip, to the Selling Your Screenplay podcast. I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So to start out, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up and how did you get interested in the entertainment business?
I started in the entertainment business, the film business, through music, through some early unknown punk bands, screaming on stage, mm-hmm. screaming our hearts out. Trying to describe some of the things that were maybe screaming in my head. So I started filming these bands on Super 8 camera in the early days of that era, and getting a crash course in filmmaking and music. And we were jumping in beat up vans and traveling around touring. And some of those music videos taught me a lot about filmmaking. Started doing a lot more music videos, some major label music videos, which quickly led to making this film, Tuscaloosa, which is my first feature film.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about that just briefly, and then we'll get into Tuscaloosa. So you were a musician, and then you started filming your own band, and then ultimately started branching out and filming other bands as well?
Yeah, I started as just a, unknown band playing in some alternative punk bands, putting out our own records. But I carried a Super 8 camera with me.
Yeah,
it's a crash course in filmmaking, like filmmaking boot camp, doing that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I read the novel Tuscaloosa, wrote the screenplay based on it, and became obsessed with it ever since. And fast forward to today, where we finally put this novel onto the screen, which I'm so proud of. Mm-hmm. It's coming out this year, 2020, during the election year. So I'm really pleased with that.
Perfect. Yeah. So let's talk about that process a little bit. How did you come in contact with the novel? Did you option the novel before you wrote the screenplay? Maybe talk about that process a little bit of approaching the novelist and getting the rights and that sort of stuff.
Well, Glasgow Phillips, he wrote the novel. And over quite a few years, when I first had read the novel, it just haunted me. It was in my mind all the time. I couldn't seem to shake it. It seemed like a strong story that aged very well, and it kept catching up to the political times. In maybe 4 years ago or so, we optioned the novel, and I got some seed money through the producer, Patrick Riley, and we started developing it. I had already taken some stabs through fits and starts at writing the screenplay, but we really honed it much more just before shooting. And actually, the writing continued right through shooting because I realized, you know, I wanted to develop some certain characters. YG, who played a side character, YG is the rapper from Compton, he plays a side character. When I got to meet him on set, I started writing him scenes, which could develop his character a lot. And I thought he was a fascinating person in life with his rap career. And I let him, I quoted some Vietnam soldiers at the time, recorded in the early 70s, and I let YG put it into his own words. And I'm so glad I did that because it really started to develop some of those characters that were more or less side characters in the novel. And I wanted to just show that side of what it was like to be a young African-American who's just come out of the Vietnam War, where they've been drafted and thrown into the world of Tuscaloosa, Alabama in 1972. Those were hinted at in the novel, and I think the novel does a really great job telling that story. But when we see the characters on screen, I just wanted to develop that a lot more. And I was just fascinated by some of these actors who could put these things into their own words with their own experiences and allow that to dig deeper into what that world must have been like in 1972.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe you could give us a quick picture log line. What is the log line for Tuscaloosa?
Well, I have been saying to people, Tuscaloosa stars Natalia Dyer from Stranger Things. It takes place in 1972 Alabama. And right away people go, oh, I think I get it. I'm not sure what the log line is. I know we wrote it. Sorry. But, you know, I just think it's an allegory for our political times, even though it takes place in 1972 Alabama. I think a lot of those things are the same today in our current political times. And I think that's where the attraction is. Mm-hmm. I mean, Virginia is a woman thrown into an institution against her will. She's a young woman who is brought to Tuscaloosa. She's diagnosed as quote unquote a nymphomaniac, which is it's a term that they used to oppress women at the time. Billy, on the other hand, he plays a cocaine college grad who just got a temporary job mowing lawns at this institution. He falls for her. His father happens to be the psychiatrist, and his best friend, Nigel, grew up on the other side of the tracks. He's a young black man who's growing apart from his childhood friend, Billy, and he's starting to fight the white power. So all these things, we follow Virginia. Is she instead just thrown into an insane world of Tuscaloosa? She may be the only sane person in Billy's world. She's trying to escape. She wants out, and she's going to use Billy one way or another. She's going to leave with or without him. Billy has to hang on for the ride. Mm-hmm. Billy's the cool guy. He smokes pot, but he doesn't want anything to do with politics. He wants to avoid it at all costs. And as YG's character Antoine says in the movie, you're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. And he's pointing at Billy. He is the problem. Something we now acknowledge, and how that creates generations of racism, whether we know it or not.
I'm curious, you mentioned one of the alterations you made. You sort of tried to bring in some of the characters and develop them further. What were some other challenges with adapting this material from book to screenplay? Mm-hmm. Were there some things, it sounds like there's some things that you tried to fill out, but were there some other things that you had to really pull back where he spent a lot of time in the book, but you didn't necessarily think that it would be cinematic, so maybe you cut some of that stuff out?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm trying to think back now based on that, Ashley, and One thing I recall is in the book they had an entire backstory of Billy and his best friend Nigel. Billy was a privileged white kid, grew up on this institution. Nigel is his best friend. Both their mothers ran away in a lesbian love affair in the 1950s, and they were told they burned up in an oil fire, you know. But by this time, they're in their early 20s, mm-hmm. they question what really happened. That's kind of the backstory. But also in the novel went through all these different ages as they grew up. They were like 4 years old, 6 years old, 8, 13, and so on. And that was a really big story to tell, especially on an independent film budget. And so when I decided just to let that all go, and some of that backstory I was able to write into 1972 dialogue when these guys are in their early 20s, just to try to tell people what their connection was. And when I let those flashbacks go, I realized we had a contemporary story, contemporary as in 1972. It really honed the ideas down to what the heart of this story was, as these young people are coming of age and doing different things based on this fictional story that takes place in a certain town in Alabama. And that made the story seem like we could actually make it. It was like a light at the end of the tunnel. We refined it. Maybe mm-hmm. it allows the viewer, I hope, to refine the ideas a little bit more, too, and get a better understanding. Maybe if I had unlimited budget, if I were Steven Spielberg or something, all that would be in there, and it would be a three-hour movie. But we made a tight 90-minute movie. And by letting that go, mm-hmm. it just freed me up to concentrate on the ideas that I think really counted.
Yeah. So let's talk just about the writing of the screenplay a little bit. How much time did you spend like outlining it, just reading the book, making notes, versus how much time did you spend actually in final draft cranking out script pages?
Well, I don't remember exactly how much time, but I did kind of outline the entire novel. It was a vetted novel, which is amazing. I thought the Glasgow Phillips writing was beautiful. I thought some of the dialogue was just fascinating. So I really latched on to that. And then I told you the process where I dropped the backstory. Mm-hmm. That allowed the movie to really take off. I think some of my early versions were just kind of identical to the, but they kind of plotted along and it was really getting wordy. It was like pages and pages and pages. But when I got rid of that backstory, it started to get to like about 100-page script. And I really could concentrate on these characters and what their feelings were in this contemporary time of 1972 Alabama. But then I thought, man, we have a tight script. This is amazing. You know, the actors like it. They're reading the page. But while we're shooting, I started to realize there were a few holes. I realized, like I said about this character Antoine, played by YG, he needed more of a backstory. He can't be just a side character, you know? And so mm-hmm. I developed more of his backstory with his experience of being drafted into Vietnam. I even made something up for him just as a motivation. I told YG, just off the top of my head, you had a flamethrower and you had to burn people in Vietnam and this stuff. You know, it's not in the script, but this is what you dealt with. And now you're entering back into society in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and you're being attacked by police and looked at with suspicion and all these things, and this is really upsetting you. It's a call to action. Virginia, her story was pretty similar to the entire novel, but I did find out, like, right at this time of shooting, you know, the Me Too movement was really hot and heavy, and it was very, very apparent that we have to really be aware of how we present Virginia. And I remember there was one scene where Virginia was a prop in a scene. She was just standing there while the guys were doing the talking. And Devin Bostick, young actor, Natalia Dyer, they brought this up right away. They said, come on, I can't be a prop. This scene's faulty. I totally listened to him. I was like, oh, my God, why didn't I see this? This is so apparent right now. And we threw a bunch of Devin's lines over to Natalia where she could chime in and express her feelings about the same situation. I'm so glad we did that. So those are some of the things we changed along the way. And then again, we changed more things in the edit. We dropped scenes that we shot that we thought were amazing, and it just was not working in the edit. So that was the third rewrite of the script, so to speak. The first screenplay, the shoot, while we were writing certain scenes and developing characters and adjusting, things were happening so fast at the time, in politically as well. And then in the edit, we almost did another major rewrite. And I learned so much from doing that. I came in thinking, this script is airtight. And by the end of it, I'm like, wow, that was that was a whirlwind of education and filmmaking.
Perfect, Phil. Just, I really appreciate you coming on and talking with me today. Good luck with this film. And of course, good luck with all your future films as well. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
I just want to talk quickly about SYS Select. It's a service for screenwriters to help them sell their screenplays and get writing assignments. The first part of the service is the SYS Select Screenplay Database. Screenwriters upload their screenplays along with a logline, synopsis, and other pertinent information like budget and genre, and then producers search for and hopefully find screenplays they want to produce. Dozens of producers are in the system looking for screenplays right now. There have been a number of success stories come out of the service. You can find out about all the SYS Select successes by going to sellingyourscreenplay.com/success. Also on SYS podcast episode 222, I talk with Steve Deering, who was the first official success story to come out of the SYS Select database. When you join SYS Select, you get access to the screenplay database along with all the other services that we're providing to SYS Select members. These services include the newsletter. This monthly newsletter goes out to a list of over 400 producers who are actively seeking writers and screenplays. Each SYS Select member can pitch one screenplay in this monthly newsletter. We also provide screenwriting leads. We have partnered with one of the premier paid screenwriting leads services, so I can syndicate their leads to SYS Select members. There are lots of great paid leads coming in each week from our partner. Recently, we've been getting 5 to 10 high-quality paid leads per week. These leads run the gamut. There's producers looking for a specific type of spec script to producers looking to hire a screenwriter to write up one of their ideas or properties. They're looking for shorts, features, TV, and web series pilots, all types of projects. If you sign up for SYS Select, you'll get these leads emailed directly to you several times per week. Also, you get access to the SYS Select forum, where we will help you with your logline and query letter and answer any screenwriting-related questions that you might have. We also have a number of screenwriting classes that are recorded and available in the SYS Select forum. These are all the classes that I've done over the years, so you'll have access to those whenever you want. Once you join, the classes cover every part of writing your screenplay, from concept to outlining to the first act, second act, third act, as well as other topics like writing short films and pitching your projects in person. Once again, if this sounds like something you'd like to learn more about, please go to sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. Again, that is sellingyourscreenplayselect.com. So quick, first, let me just apologize. Phil got cut off when we were doing the interview and I couldn't get him back. I thought it was a really good interview, so I didn't want to just scrap the interview. We were pretty much done, but I didn't get my closing comments. So sorry about that. It wasn't in the edit. It was in the recording of the interview. So you didn't miss anything. I just didn't get the end of the interview. So again, sorry about that. Again, hopefully you got some value out of it, even though it got cut a little bit short. On the next episode of the podcast, I'm going to be interviewing John Adler. He's a screenwriter who turned a horrific life experience into a screenplay, which eventually got turned into the film called Dead Sound. I'll be talking to him next week about exactly how he built his career and really how he got this film produced. So keep an eye out for that episode next week. Anyway, that's the show. Thank you for listening.